This is Dr. Rob Harder with the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, making your world better. What does it take to be an effective nonprofit leader today? What are the biggest challenges? What are the biggest obstacles? How should nonprofits fundraise in an economy that is constantly changing? All of these reasons combined led me to start this show. And it's my hope that through this series, people can learn not only what it takes to be an effective nonprofit organization, but to hear from effective leaders who are successfully making a positive impact in their communities. We hope you enjoy the show, as together we hear how they are making their world better. Hello, podcast listeners. Thanks for tuning in again today. Hey, I want to start again by saying we have a YouTube channel. So all this great content that you hear, perhaps just through audio, whether you listen to Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcast, well, now all that content is on video. Now, we've been capturing that for a while, but now it's on our YouTube channel. So just go to YouTube, check out Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. This page should pop up, and you can not only listen to all this great content that you've been already listening to, but there's additional video content. So I encourage you to, again, go to YouTube, check out Nonprofit Leadership Podcast, and best of all, subscribe to our YouTube channel. That would be awesome. That'll help get this great content out to more leaders just like you. Thanks in advance for that. Well, today, I really have enjoyed this conversation with Joe Davis. He's my guest today. He is the author of the book called The Generous Leader. Joe is a fascinating guest for many reasons, but he's going to focus his attention on the power of generous leadership. And he's not talking about financial generosity. He's actually talking about what it means to bring your whole authentic self to your leadership role. In fact, the way he would speak about it, it's being more empathetic. It's being really in touch with your emotions, being vulnerable as a leader, sharing who you really are with your team, helping them get engaged, being honest that maybe you don't have all the answers. All these things that, for example, Brené Brown, a very popular author, has talked a lot about the power of vulnerability. And he really has the same kind of concept when it comes to leadership. He has found that better leaders, stronger leaders, are those who really show this generous spirit, this generous heart. And so I think you're going to really enjoy as we dive deep into what does it mean, really? What does it look like to be a, quote, generous leader? How do you bring your full authentic self? How do you show empathy but still keep professional boundaries? All of this and more is really forms the conversation today. And I think you're going to really enjoy listening to Joe Davis's insights. As always, thanks for tuning in. Now on to the show. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business. Well, welcome to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. It's so good to have Joe Davis here on the show today. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. It's really great to be here. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So I presume you're calling in from Boston, I see.
Well, you know, it says Boston Consulting Group where I work, but no, we have offices all over the world. I happen to be in the Washington, D.C. area, Bethesda, Maryland.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Okay. No, that's good to know. Yeah, because we will talk about Boston Consulting
Group. We can do that, but it's all over the world.
Well, that sounds good. Well, let's dive in. There's a lot of good things, and I really like the topic today is leadership. And that's really appropriate because my whole podcast is about leadership, introducing my listeners to great leaders like yourself, books on leadership, insights about how to become a better leader. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And let's start with a book that you've written and a lot of the concepts that come out of your book. And one of the things you talk about is the importance of being a generous leader. And you're not just talking about money here. So how does a generous leader differ from a traditional unilateral leader?
So I guess a couple of things I'd say. First off, I define a generous leader as someone who is willing, freely willing to give of himself without expectation of personal benefit to ensure others grow, develop, and even thrive at their full potential. I will say, of course, if you do that and everyone's at their full potential, you will benefit because everybody's, you know, as the leader. But that's, and you know, the thing I'll be careful not to say though, is you still have to be, you know, a bit, you have to have the basics of management. You got to be a visionary, set strategy, be able to set targets and drive the metrics. I'm not saying that that goes, it's not just be a nice person, but I do think, I think the world is changing a bit that you want. Somebody said to me, good managers who are also good leaders. And I think part of being a good leader is really connecting with your people.
I like that. No, that's good. Okay. No, it's very good. And I know you're a big fan of empathetic leadership, which I fully resonate with. So how can channeling empathy help unlock your leadership potential? And how do you, at the same time, you kind of already alluded to this, but how can you, when you're showing empathetic leadership, how can you at the same time keep healthy professional boundaries while still showing empathy?
Yeah, yeah. That's an interesting question. The first half, you know, just, I think we should make sure that everyone thinks of what the word empathy means together. And, you know, my sense of it, and I did look it up in the dictionary, but the ability to, well, you know, because actually you think compassion, but if you read what compassion is, it's a different word from empathetic. It's quite different. But, you know, the ability to understand, be aware of, and be sensitive to others' feelings and experiences. And, or, you know, it's just the psychology world will say perspective taking, you know, what is the perspective of the other person? Where are they coming from, et cetera? And, you know, now I think most, actually it was Kristen Peck, the CEO of Zoetis, the pet pharmaceutical company, was talking to Alan Murray. And she said over half the employees are millennials and actually, or Gen Zers, I mean, millennials and actually Gen Zers are now in the market. So a lot of our people are younger people and they expect empathetic leaders who connect in a different way. So you really do need to bring, well, you don't need to, you should be bringing that empathy. And I think if you do, if you're listening to others, you're asking them questions, if you're connecting with them, you're showing your care, you're showing they're really a human being, you understand that they're not just a cog in the wheel, et cetera. And that, I think that really helps their potential climb and helps yours. Now, the boundaries is an interesting thing because, you know, I was thinking about that question and just, I mean, it is many years ago, there was some research that looked at, you know, what if you just say thank you know, small acts or, you know, hey, you're doing a great job. It, like many, many years ago, and it wasn't done much, probably because it wasn't empathetic type leadership. And it said, and even the leaders were afraid, well, what if I go too far? What if I say too much? Now, times have changed a bit, but I think, you know, now we could be in, well, what if I say you look great today? Well, what, you know, what's that all about? So I was thinking about it. I think the first thing, so you don't go too far. I mean, what is it that you as a person would be comfortable with or be happy to have someone say? And now, and if you're even there, if you're confused, you know, what would you be comfortable if someone said to your daughter or son or spouse, doesn't care what gender, if, you know, not a 4-year-old, but a 16 or plus, you know, and if you think, wow, I wouldn't want someone to say that to my family member, well, probably you've gone too far. But I got to tell you, if you're slightly afraid to, you know, be empathetic, I think you're a long ways from getting too far. Now, if you're overly empathetic and, oh, hey, how are you doing today, Rob? And what's going on? You know, then maybe you could figure out where to dial back. The other thing I've always did, I had a good chief of staff when I was head of BCG North America who was quite good at afterwards. Hey, Joe, you know, this or that you said, think about that a little bit because that was perceived this way or that way. But I do think it's better to take chances on being empathetic, even if you step over a line. If people think you actually care and worried about their well-being, they'll forgive mistakes. Now, if you don't care, well, then you're not in the right place to start anyway.
Well said. No, I like that. Thanks for giving a little bit more context to that. Now, when it comes to innovative strategies to incorporate deeper communication and listening, which are so critical for leadership, how does this correlate with how asking is more powerful than telling? So,
yeah, well, I mean, it just goes back to the same thing we just said, you know, when I'll say this, Joaquin Duato, CEO of J&J, he said, you know, Joe, of course, it's all about outcomes as a leader. You got to hit the numbers. But the sooner you get past yourself, understand it's not about you, but it's about you actually listening to, connecting with your team. The sooner you unlock all the traits your team, of that human team that really can drive a difference. So I do think it's, you know, and I see, so the other thing I'd say is the best leaders, I think, always know they don't know, you know, like, what don't I know? And then, you know, they'll over and over, Scott Kirby said, well, gosh, now United Airlines is having issues with Boeing. I get it. But he said, if I don't know what's going on, I just go down there and ask people what's going on and just ask the questions. So I think that's very critical. And it just, again, shows you care about the other person. I mean, undoubtedly, they know something you don't know, and the two together is going to be better. And so now you ask, what are some ways to do it? Let me tell you one actually interesting story. Even just you're trying to ask questions and listen to and connect with large groups. Joaquin Duato, again, the CEO of J&J, does two things. He has this thing called friend testing and called group testing. And when he first took on the role at J&J, he asked, you know, someone less senior to him, which was everybody, but a friend, you know, what are people saying what are they thinking I'm saying right now? And he said, well, sir, they're saying you want to cut cost. He said, well, I never said that. He said, I want to be more, you know, streamlined and more effective. He said, yeah, that's what you said, cut cost. So I didn't say those words. So he said, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about effectiveness of the organization and people are thinking I mean less people. The other thing he does, I thought was very powerful, is he'll have, if he's going to give a talk or a speech, he'll get a group of people together and practice it. And then he'll say, well, what did you hear? And they'll play back words they heard. He says, oh, I takes a pen down. Okay, they said, I said this, I said boat, and they heard ship. I'll change the word to ship. Or he'll ask them, if you were to tell your family tonight at dinner, what did Joaquin say today? I'll have him play the whole thing back. And then I say, oh, you know, and adjust. So, you know, that's, I think it's quite obvious to ask, not obvious, but it's quite important that you try to ask. But one last, you asked about techniques quickly. You know, one other thing I'll say is I was trained by my mentor at BCG to always find and engage the skeptics and uncover the no's. You know, and it's pretty, and this could be any sort of role you're in, right? But, you know, because the knowers or the knowologists, as someone told me they should be called, aren't there to block typically, maybe 1 out of 1,000 try to block. But most of them know something you don't know about why something won't work. When you get that in your head, both of you, you know, everybody can get a solution faster.
No, well said. And, you know, this is a good like segue into when it comes to like recognizing leaders and what they're good at and realizing there's people maybe smarter than you on your team, which you hope you have, that fill in the gaps of your leadership team. So when it comes to when you're recognizing leaders, leaders often are celebrated for delivering results like stockholder returns or growth, et cetera. While these are super important metrics, of course, you've got to measure these things. But what are the other factors that we should be measuring when evaluating a leader's impact?
Well, yeah, I do think you want to measure I'll call it the human side, but maybe the development side, how they're creating, what their team is doing, how is their team performing as part of your team? And, you know, there's, I was thinking about different metrics you might use, you know, or if you're running the company, you could use reputation of the company type of measure, NPS or something, which is different from the numbers. Or are you on Fortune's, not to call out Fortune, best place to work or not? You know, or do you have internal people surveys, which a lot of organizations have, and really break those down. And how is the leader of this department or division doing? How is his team feeling? What is the morale? Are people saying they will be here 1 year from now or not? Everybody's saying no. I mean, there's no hard data there, but it says something about something in that area. But I think, you know, I'll tell you another story. I think even more importantly is that the leader turns and looks inside themselves. And there's a guy named Samir Otis, who is the CEO of Icertis. It's a procurement company, which he started. And he came out of Wharton. He went to Microsoft when he was a young guy. He said, Joe, it's all about the numbers. Go, 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 deliver. And I think he was in the Ballmer years, which you could even guess. He said, but I've seen over my 30 years, this has just changed. And he really realized it when he said, I left Microsoft and had a small company that I was trying to turn around. And we were not a company that was honest. We weren't clear with our clients or each other. And I realized this just doesn't work, the number. But I actually had to, you know, bring a little authenticity into the company. And he said that took him to one more level. He said, I now look at this word metacognition to use, which I had to go look up. But actually, you know, he steps back from himself and he says every year at the end of the year, he actually says, am I a better leader? Am I a better husband? Am I a better father? That's pretty, and am I a better human being? And then he said, where can I push further? And if I say to myself, I have nowhere to push further, then I'm not thinking hard enough. So that's not a metric a company could do, but that's a metric you or I, you know, we ourselves could do every once a year or maybe twice a year, which I thought was pretty interesting way to think about, you know, leadership. But it's really a way to think about humanity. But
I would love that. No, I like the holistic approach, right? I know we've had a guest on the show one time that said, when it comes to work, and particularly in today's world, I think even more so as a leader, you want to bring your whole authentic self. In other words, I think back in maybe a while ago, there was a separation between work and personal life. And I think certainly since COVID, when everything's kind of on Zoom and you're working out of your house, right? Yeah. Just like here we are.
Both are in our house.
Exactly. Touche, right? But like it's the work and personal life boundaries just have gotten eroded. But I think there's a good side to that, going back to what your friend just said, is that there is a sense that you bring your full self and you're a better leader when you do that. So I really like that approach. But let's get back to empathy, because it's something that, you know, kind of another application of that, if you will. Brené Brown's a very popular author for a lot of leaders right now, right? And talking about vulnerability. And so when leaders who traditionally view emotion and vulnerability as weaknesses, they really do face a big challenge today when it comes to leading with heart. So from your perspective and your idea of a generous leader, how can they move past that discomfort and really embrace what it means to be a true generous leader, not just an emotional leader, like you said, but truly someone who's a generous leader?
Yeah. And you're spot on. And that depending on where you're starting from and who you are, that could be really, really hard. I had a good friend at BCG who I was asking him about vulnerability. He said, you know, Joe, I used to just really be afraid to not know the answer. He was a partner. And he said, if the team was working on something and I could tell they were stuck and were going to maybe ask me and I didn't know, before I got asked, I left the room. Isn't that interesting? that's not productive.
No, you know?
And he said, but I was afraid to say, I don't know. It's just your point. He said, finally, one time I said, I don't know. I said, you know, I don't know either. And he said, the whole room was like this fresh air blast through. Oh, you don't know either? Oh, none of us know. Oh, wow. Well, let's really figure out. And boom, you just unlocked so much potential. So I think, you know, a couple of things you asked how, but I'll just say a couple of things. You know, point, you know, people need to understand when you actually demonstrate some level of vulnerability and some uncertainty, you free your team to say, oh, well, we don't know either. Oh, gosh, he or she are exposing to me. Then I can actually, otherwise they so often get frozen, get stuck, and then no one gets the best things done. So a couple of thoughts. I mean, one, someone said to me, well, just, you know, if you're trying to figure out how to get there, watch and learn leaders in your organization or others. How did they do it? You know, that you may not go as far as they went or do it, but, and look what happened. They did it. And what was the outcome? Painful, or is the outcome actually beneficial? I mean, you could just learn there. Someone else told me, you know, release your own fears. Like, and I think this is a good one. Think back in your life to a time where something, you were vulnerable and it was very, whatever, embarrassing or whatever. And what happened? I mean, you're still here. And someone asked me, what are some of my moments out there? There's two or three that really changed my life, I believe. But I didn't know it at the time. When I got married, when I was pretty young, 23. I cried through my entire vows. I couldn't get through my vows. My spouse went right through. The minister had to tell me like five words at a time. And afterwards, I was so embarrassed. Like, you know, you're not supposed to. And people came, oh, Joe, there was so much love and so much emotion. You know, it's like, oh, wow, I'm getting fucked. I got, yeah, and I was, and then a little, like, more powerful. My mom died when I was 30. She was 57. And the three brothers were talking at the service. That time I sobbed. I couldn't get it out. But the minister, that's, I guess, the priest at that time, he said, Joe, tears are the fountains of love. So, you know, there's so many guys that say, oh, I can't cry. Well, I had a moment where I can look back to those, say, wow, that didn't hurt. And actually, if I reflect on it, the feedback I got was just the opposite, didn't hurt. It was very powerful. So I think one thing is reflect back to your own moments that maybe something like that happened. Say, hey, I made it through. And then take some chances, you know? But the last thing I'd say is, you know, keep it reasonably safe. Don't cry in front of 1,000 people if you're afraid to cry at home.
Yeah, exactly. So, start slow.
Start slow, you know? But I do believe, you know, to your point, you hear more and more the power of it. And I think, well, you started with this, you know, this, it's all blurred and a lot of younger folks, that they look for their leaders to, you know, be part of the team and, you know, understand where they're coming from.
I think so. Well said. And thanks for sharing your story a little bit. Well, now back to your book, as we've been talking about, this book on leadership, you dedicate an entire chapter to the idea that small acts as a leader have a big impact on one's team. So talk about that. Why is that practice so important? And how is even the busiest leaders of the largest organizations, you've already mentioned a few of them, how can they implement this practice of doing small acts as a leader?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, well, you'd almost think it's obvious, right? But I remember when you used to get in grade school, you got the star on the top. That's a little teeny act, you know, but you felt pretty darn good about it. And so, you know, so even today, thanking somebody, congratulating somebody, you know, you get on a Zoom call, it's just the two of us, but there's 16 faces on here, and you ask the least tenured person, how was your day? Also, whoa, you reached out to me? These things make people feel recognized. They inspire people. They get people included and get them motivated. And, you know, and you might think, oh, that's hard in a big company. I have mentioned Scott Kirby, I think already, CEO of United. He, after the George Floyd murder, he actually called every don't know if he got all of them, but he had airplane captain of color, and just reached out and said, "How are you doing?" How are you doing? And he said his wife was on a flight, and the captain, a black woman, came back and said, "Oh, I just love United. I love your husband." She goes, "What do you mean?" Well, he called me just to check in at a very difficult time. And now you might say, maybe that's a big act, but he probably made 40 calls over 3 days. Not that bad. And here's a guy who runs a giant company. So, you know, you actually can do that. Now, you know, I think you gotta think about how you're going to do it. You probably need to, and that, you know, create a list of, like, I'd say happy birthday to, when I ran North America, to all the partners. So it was a long list, but then you have methods. You know, put it in your calendar and then put the notes in your calendar. say short, brief things, you know, just saying from the heart, happy birthday. Hope you have a great day. That means a lot to somebody. I don't have to go on and on. So I think it's, think about where you're going to do it. Keep it short and create some kind of processes. And, you know, it's very, very powerful. It's very powerful. Actually, it's interesting when some of the leaders I interviewed said, "Yeah, I don't think I'd do that." I was just thinking, really, do you not, or you don't know it? You know, I don't know it. I didn't push them hard enough.
No, I like that. But I like that idea of small acts. So you don't feel like you have to do always these big things. It can be those little things that really add up over time. I love that. I know I have a good friend that's just a great leader, and he just makes it a point that every day, I think it's, he said, 5 handwritten postcards, or actually, I guess he puts it in envelopes, but letters, essentially handwritten notes, 5 a day. He does it every day of the week. And over time, he's given now thousands over the last couple of years, you know, and just a small thing in some ways, but has become a huge thing and a big impact on his leadership. Wow. Isn't that? So that's,
and even if 5 sounded too big, do 2.
No, there you go. Start with 2.
You know,
absolutely. Yeah, two.
That's still more notes than you probably sent the last.
Exactly.
You know? Someone said to me, "Oh, handwritten, so old school."
It is.
I tell you, you get reinforced. People like the handwritten.
They do.
Oh, you sure you shouldn't just text them? I don't think so. That's, you know, that's very powerful what your friend does.
Isn't that a great? I know. Is that, yeah, the high touch, high tech, you know, battle. And I think that high touch of a handwritten note made a difference.
We'll be right back. Are you looking for an easy and effective way to boost your nonprofit's donations? Look no further than DonorBox, the online fundraising platform that streamlines your fundraising efforts, maximizes donations, and simplifies giving for your supporters. With DonorBox, you can create beautiful donation forms, accept digital wallet payments, track donations, and send auto receipts. And the best part? There are no setup or monthly fees and no long-term contracts required. So what are you waiting for? Visit DonorBox.org today to get started. That is DonorBox.org. Are you ready to revolutionize your advocacy efforts and significantly impact policy change? Discover Quorum and level up your advocacy to influence more lawmakers. Quorum is the only unified public affairs platform that empowers nonprofits to map, track, change, and report on the policy landscape, all in one place. Explore how Quorum Grassroots helps nonprofits create compelling campaigns in minutes. The result? Your nonprofit doesn't just participate in the advocacy, it drives it. Quorum, where influence meets innovation. You can learn more at quorum.us. Hey friends, and thanks so much for listening to the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. I want to let you know that I've recently become a professional certified coach. You know, with my nearly 30 years of nonprofit experience, I know firsthand how hard you work as a leader. I also know how important it is to have someone you can call on to get help with the barriers, the leadership challenges that you will face both professionally and personally. And I really want people to thrive, to become all they were meant to become by providing coaching and consulting services. So if coaching is something you've always been interested in, but maybe weren't quite sure what it was all about, I encourage you to reach out. You can go to my website, robharder.com, or just email me at rob@robharder.com. I would be happy to provide a free sample coaching session so you can determine if coaching is for you. All right, thanks again for tuning in. Now back to the show. All right, so you've referenced BCG, or Boston Consulting Group, and I'm glad you did, because you've been the chair of BCG, and particularly the Center for Inclusion and Equity. You've also been the CEO of Action for Racial Equity. Now, talk about that. How have those experiences impacted your own leadership and your outlook on leadership?
Yeah, well, I think it goes back to what you and I have talked about multiple times here, which is it opens your eyes to others' lived experience. It opens your eyes to the fact that they're a person, a human, whatever it might be. They're not just, oh, that guy's a manager in my company. There might be that too, but no, there's a whole lot of other stuff going on there. And I'll tell you, the other thing, well, actually, I'll tell you a story on that one. I do these deliberate discourse dinners when I was running North America, and we'd go to an office and maybe 50 people come for dinner, tables of 6 to 8, and it'd be a diverse set of people. You know, it might be a gay woman, a white 30-year-old guy, a black, you know, but all diversity. And we had conversations around race. But one fellow said to me, you know, Joe, do you understand, as a black person, one step away from partner at BCG, do you understand every day when I walk out the door of my condo or whatever to go to the office, I worry about getting shot? I looked and I thought, well, no, I didn't understand that. And I thought, geez, and I don't worry about getting shot. I don't think so. Talking about, holy moly, I saw him as an upcoming leader in BCG, as a manager. I didn't see him as this guy who gets up every day. And you read that, but you know, have someone tell you that. And then you think about, you know, if you're in a high pressure, always on job, and you have to spend some of your brain power thinking about whether you're going to die today, that's a loss of brain power that someone else doesn't lose. So I think, you know, but it's really back to this. One of the big learnings for me was the lived experience. I mean, I used to be, quote unquote, colorblind. Oh, it's all, we're all the same. Everyone's got the same chance. And come on, you could. Sure. Once you get in the door to get the chance. If you don't get in the door to get the chance, it's kind of tough. And I do think, you know, we all know people come from different starting points. And you know, the other thing I will just say on this topic that I've learned, I was doing a session in Charlotte once with a different organization, part of Southern Communities Initiative, which is taking 6 different cities in the South, and try to, you know, improve the wealth gap, basically. And I went to the session down there, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't that necessary. I mean, they had good meetings without me. And I asked the guy at the end of the day, I said, well, is it useful when I come down these things? Joe, the fact that a white, at that time, I was probably 60-year-old leader, shows up, sends a powerful signal to your colleagues, more importantly, but also to others. So, you know, it was a big lesson for me that if you care about this stuff, even just showing up sends powerful messages to others. Now, I'm not going to judge whether one wants to put their time there. There's a lot of places one can put their time to make a difference. But those are some pretty important learnings to me. But the core one was back to this whole empathy thing. Others' lived experiences are not your own. The sooner you get past thinking, sooner you learn that, the better your leader you'll be.
Very powerful. No, thanks for sharing that. And another thing I'll share from your firm, there's a bias-free leadership inclusion, safety, and support index. And your firm's index found that employees who feel happiness and empowerment at work are better able to fulfill their potential by 30%. That's a significant increase, 30%. So how can leaders play a role in increasing employee engagement? I think that's a question leaders should constantly have on their minds. What have you found to be the most successful way to implement that?
Well, I use the word inclusion. I don't mean inclusion in the diversity way only, but including the broadest set of people with different experiences and backgrounds, and you know, this department, that department, the most junior person in the work. And then when you include them, we're going to go back to what we just said. Involve them, you know. So ask them questions. Let them participate. Do not ever think you know it all. And you know, that's the underneath that bliss is really that. When people feel included, you get all those benefits. And there's a lot of other things you might have. You know, the more you can make from a diversity point of view, the organization look diverse, have a little bit diversity on the, or a lot of diversity on the top, that helps too. But you don't need to do all that to build this happiness point. You just need to engage individuals, let their contributions be part of it. And I had some people, when I ran North America, I had some, you know, bring the finance team to the meetings, and they'd say, Joe, it's so weird because usually we just send the spreadsheet. Then somebody else presented, like 2 people up, but you'd actually bring us in the room. You even ask us a question. And I have to admit, it was scary as hell, but I was really motivated afterwards because you actually included me. And I felt like, okay, what else can I do to make a difference? So I think that's the main thing is this inclusion. And I think to that, we have a theme going on here today in this conversation, but getting back to asking them how they can contribute, what is on their mind, what do they know? Quite powerful.
Excellent. Well, now let's go into those areas that can really stifle leadership, because those are real, right? And a big area that can stifle leadership is not attending to our blind spot as leaders. We all have them, but it's blind spots for a reason, right? We don't know often, we're not aware of them. So how can leaders identify blind spots specifically in their corporate culture and address sources of resistance?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of mentioned, well, maybe this ties together because when you say that, you know, they're all, you might have blind spots, but they're also made more deeply blind spots in the culture and the organization. Well, I actually think, I mean, I'm going to say some basics, but you know, if you're doing any sort of a survey, and if you're not, you probably should, you know, but if you're doing any sort of survey, actually spend time dissecting that survey. And by that, I mean, break it down to the women under 30, the women over 30, the people of color, not just, oh, on average, everyone's pretty happy. That doesn't tell you everything. So, you know, there you can find blind spots that you might be missing. Also, another important thing as a leader is engage, you know, even verbally with people, you know, not just your own leadership team, but go down, you know, talk to the HR team and someone three levels down. How are people feeling? Or go eat in the cafeteria. You know, it depends on what level you are, but you know, some people all of us eat in our office, we're always in a hurry. Well, if you even go to an office, I guess to the point you made. But you know, actually start to talk to people in the front lines a lot more about what they're seeing. The other thing I did during COVID, I started my own, what I call it, kitchen table. I did that because it's modeled after our table at our home where we'd try to have dinner. It's a consultant, so I was only home 3 nights a week. But those 3 nights, we ate together, and we always had a very dynamic conversation. So I tried to do that at BCG, and it was Zoom, of course, but I'd get, you know, maybe the second-year people and have them all on there, and I tried very hard not to talk, and we just asked questions. And man, I got some feedback that I just didn't expect. You know? And if I had tried to talk or defend myself, that would have been the end of that thing. Yeah. So I think, you know, or, you know, I mentioned a minute ago, Joaquin using that group testing, you know, those kind of tools I think you could use. And it's especially with Zoom nowadays, not very hard to tap into what people are thinking. Whereas it would have been hard before there, you know, Zoom also maybe gives a little level of safety, right? You know, if the boss is in the room with you, do you really tell them what you're thinking? I don't know. But on Zoom, if they're listening, someone else is facilitating, you might. So those would be some of my, you know, more practical ideas, at least.
Yeah. No, that's good. No, I totally agree with it. Zoom can just create a little bit of a maybe buffer, if you will, and I have noticed that people can be maybe a little bit more candid,
yeah,
you know, than they would otherwise in person.
Or at least they can do it on chat, which then you really say,
oh, well, there you go.
Another level of
that's
safety.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. That's right. Oh, absolutely. Now, you've navigated a lot of different crises, from the dot-com crash to 9/11, the American war in Iraq, the Great Recession of 2008, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic.
Us or something?
You've gone through a lot, is bottom what I'm saying. So what has all of those experiences taught you when it comes to the value of leading with care and compassion?
You know, I think the importance of connecting is just something, and connecting authentically, as you said earlier, honestly, vulnerably, you know, whatever word you want to use. I mean, COVID, when COVID hit, I'll use that. And I just did these town halls, like probably everybody did, but you know, the first time I ever had 4,000 to 7,000 people. Now they couldn't talk to me, but we were all there. And I remember my second one, I did it from my daughter's bedroom. I just like to move around to different rooms, but it happened to be that it had, you know, what we call it, had hearts and clouds and rainbows on her wallpaper. It wasn't intentional, but you could guess that already set up. And then I just talked about my children, my son-in-law who just got COVID, my daughter, we were putting on her plane back to Germany. He was in the military. You know, that was scary. And my other daughter was a nurse at a hospital that either had the first or second case. That was scary. And I remember I told this story and I teared up a bit because I'm talking about my family and, you know, no one knew what was going on at that time. The feedback was so immediate and so powerful. Like, well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you. Man, I've been feeling these things. You just allowed me to release a little bit. So there's a couple of points in these scary times, the willingness to connect, actually get out there and connect. And there's a lot of ways to do it. And, you know, be personal, be vulnerable a bit. I mean, you probably seen that famous video that Arne Sorensen, he was the CEO of Marriott. He did a video when Marriott let 80% of their staff either go or furlough them because nobody went to a hotel. So, you know, I think they furloughed most of them, but he did a video and he was actually dying from cancer at the time. So he was no hair because it was very, very vulnerable and real. It was very powerful. Now that's, you know, COVID's an extreme, but it doesn't matter. You know, just if times are tough, another employee said, well, just like that United story that he reached out to Black people during a time that was very difficult for everybody, but for Black people in particular, meant a lot to them, you know, and it was a simple connection that meant a lot. So I think that's the main thing that drove home to me, connecting, listening to learn, what are they thinking? What are they living through? It's just very powerful in these difficult times. It's important all the time, but really difficult times. That'd be very important and difficult.
Well, you provide so many great insights in your book. And thanks again for being on the show to share a little bit of just the highlights. So I encourage my listeners to find out a little bit more about the book and maybe even connect with you. And so if they want to do that, what's the best way for them to connect with you and learn about your book?
Well, probably the best is joedavis.com because it's real easy. That's my website, you know, real easy. Or, you know, LinkedIn, Joe Davis, BCG or whatever. And I post quite a bit. Those are probably the easiest two ways. You know, I actually don't care if you buy the book, but I do care if you read the book. So if you get your hands on a book, read it. Because I'd actually like leaders to be a little, if we all come from the heart more than we might, then you could just imagine how this place would continue to be a better place.
Right? Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Well, Joe, again, thanks for all you're doing in this space. Thanks for the insights you're giving us on leadership. And thanks again for taking time to be on the show to share your insights from this book. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Rob, for having me.
Hey, friends. Well, I wanted you to know that this podcast can be found on iTunes, Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcasts, and wherever you listen to other podcasts. I also want to encourage you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast with others. This will actually help us get this great content out to more nonprofit leaders just like you. You can also join the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast community, find other resources and interviews of past guests, all on my website, nonprofitleadershippodcast.org. Well, thanks again for listening. And until next time, keep making your world better. And don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel, the Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. Go to YouTube and look up Nonprofit Leadership Podcast. We'll see you there. This podcast is sponsored by DonorBox. DonorBox, helping you help others with the best donation forms in the business.